All right.
Okay. The first group of questions I have relate to your grandparents. That goes back a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why I'm interested in grandparents, because if you learn some things from them, they were telling you things that happened when they were young. I don't know how far back we can reach, but we're going to try it. But do you remember your grandparents?
Oh, sure. I was looking at pictures yesterday of my grandparents. My grandfather, he came from South Carolina.
Okay.
Brought my mother, and they said he came down on a horse and buggy. I don't know how they got here on a horse and buggy from South. They came from Sumter, South Carolina. Evidently, there was a railroad building. They were building a railroad into Florida. And he heard about, wherever he worked on the railroad, and he was worked in the railroad shop. It must be, from what I can understand, from that he was some kind of blacksmith or repairman in the railroad shop.
Okay.
And he came down and brought my mother was one of the older girls, and I think it was about six girls. No, five girls and one boy. It was six of them.
Okay.
He brought them from South Carolina to Fernandina.
How well did you know your grandparents?
My grandmother, I knew real well. My grandfather, I didn't know. I mean, I can remember him faintly back. He died, I think, in 1926 or 28 back in that time. Mm-hmm. And I was a small kid back there.
Okay.
But my grandmother, I remember her well because she lived so much longer. See, she was younger, so much younger than my grandfather, so she lived longer.
Yeah, right.
And she only died in the 40s.
Oh. Did you ever hear them, your grandparents, did you ever hear them talk about the Civil War or slavery?
No, I wouldn't remember much about that.
Okay.
But I had an uncle, by marriage, talked about it. And I guess Jackie probably told you his name was Stays.
No,
he mentioned Stays.
No, he didn't mention Stays. It was your uncle.
It was my uncle by marriage.
Okay.
His son married my mother's sister, so he was my uncle by marriage.
Did he talk about the Civil War or slavery or?
He was a, we call him Judge Stays. He was back in that day, where I understand my recollection, he was a lawyer. He practiced law here in Fernandina.
Okay.
But if I understand what it says, you didn't have to go to Harvard or whatnot to become a lawyer back there. If you studied a certain amount of law and you was elected to a certain thing, then you became
a lawyer.
So. Back in Reconstruction area, I mean, last of it, he seemed to have been appointed a judge.
Okay.
Here in Fernandina, and we all call him Judge Stays.
Okay.
And I'm trying to remember his first name. I have to go to the cemetery to find his first name. But anyway, it was Stays, S-T-A-Y-E-S.
I assume most black people went to him for their lawyer needs?
Back as far as in the 30s now, we came from St. Augustine here in 1935.
Okay.
We lived down in St. Augustine. Okay. We were back and forth, but we actually came here to stay in 1935.
Uh-huh.
And he was there. Then wasn't much that sort of business. Wasn't no money in it. So he was agent for the Afro-American Insurance Company. Okay. Started in 1900.
Okay.
And he, for this entire district, and deeds and that side of papers, helping people that couldn't read and write with papers and legal things, and he would file them, see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was he.
How old were you when you came from St. Augustine?
I was about 13, 14 years old.
Do you remember hearing anything about Rosewood and situations like that?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about some of those things?
I don't, I mean, you know, we,
yeah.
back around Hastings, Florida, and out in the country area, they call a place where, I can't think of Hastings, and there's quite a few places out in the country. It wasn't a town, it was just a settlement.
Yeah, okay.
They called it a settlement. And everybody knew about Rosewood in the settlement, see?
Mm-hmm.
And what had happened there, and that was a terrorizing thing back in that day.
Did it frighten you, even though you weren't there? Were you?
Oh, well, in that day and time, if you can picture it in your mind, just the word of Ku Klux Klan or something like that, it frightened most black people because mm-hmm. they had no protection of themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever was done to them, and there was no recourse. So there was a frightening experience to know that something could be done to you, and
mm-hmm.
Anything could be done, and you had no recourse whatsoever.
Yeah. Did your grandparents ever talk about the Klan that you remember?
No, they never.
Yeah.
My mother and father didn't, but it was common knowledge. And in St. Augustine, I can remember it was just a common thing to have demonstrations and rioting and parades, whatever they called the thing at that time.
Yeah. And those were difficult times, weren't they?
Uh-huh.
How did your grandparents earn a living?
My grandfather, he worked in the railroad shop.
Railroad, you mentioned.
He worked in a railroad shop. And my grandmother, back in that day, most of women stayed home. They would do what they call home laundry.
Okay. People brought their laundry
and they would do it there. And my grandmother, she would wash the clothes and iron them and then...
Mm-hmm.
And they would pick them up, or the kids would carry them back to the family. See?
There's another little piece of history that eludes me. Maybe you heard something about it from your parents or your grandparents. When the Union took over this area in 1862, mm-hmm. right after the war started, mm-hmm. many, many people from this area who were Confederate sympathizers moved into the county. They got away from Fernandina. Did you know any people that talked about that?
I've heard talk about it. There was a lady, she died. Now, she was a historian because she had all her relics and things that she saved.
Mm-hmm.
Her father, her name was Blanche Williams. I'm trying to think of Ray. Trying to think of her maiden name. She was Lorena's aunt from our church.
Okay.
Blanche Williams, what was her name? Blanche Williams. Anyway, her father was a Union soldier and came with the garrison to hold Fernandina. Now, my understanding from her, what happened back there, that the Union Army would come and secure a place. Then they would leave so many black soldiers or mixed or whatever they call them
mm-hmm.
to maintain that area
mm-hmm.
while they went on to another area.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's my understanding for her. And her father was one of the soldiers. Now this could have been in the 1800s. From what I can gather from where she said it, it was in the 1800s, it could have been 1864 or 1865.
Towards the end of the war.
End of the war.
Yeah.
And they went on to Jacksonville, they marched to Jacksonville, and they left them here.
I see.
And he stayed here and after the war, and then he worked as a stevedore.
Okay. Was he black?
Black.
He was black. Black Union soldier.
Black Union soldier.
Okay.
And that was commonly in this area. Now, there were others, from my understanding, on the south end of the island, in the old island here, it was, the distance of walking wasn't nothing, you know. But on the south end of the island, it was the Drummers and the Means. All those were soldiers.
Okay.
That
all right.
came in.
Okay.
And if you took time, some time, go out to the cemetery, for instance.
Franklin Town?
No, right out here.
At Bosque Bell?
And I could point out Union soldiers.
I see.
That from the tombstones okay. out there. They didn't bury all of them together now, yeah. if you would understand
yeah,
what I'm saying.
Sure.
But they had them. They were spotted all over yeah. the cemetery.
Well, sometime let's like, go on.
They, some of them was, some of them were called a colored regiment and the so-and-so. And
yeah.
That's the way they were identified.
Okay.
But that's there.
Okay.
And
well, that would be interesting to take a look.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever hear of convict leasing when you were a young man?
Oh, sure. Oh, definitely.
Did you know anybody who was caught up in that, or do you know anything about?
Well, I had a neighbor. She was a lady, and she was caught up in that. Her name was,
That's
her name?
Okay. Don't worry about the name.
I'll think of a name after yeah. a while. It was Hunter. I think of a first name after a while. Elnora Hunter.
Okay.
She used to tell us about this same building here. There was, this is going back in the 30s.
Right.
Early 30s.
Yeah.
And there were needed labor
yeah.
on farms, roads, whatever.
Turpentine. Or
whatever.
Yeah.
Turpentine was one of the most things they would need. Mm-hmm. And if the owner would tell the sheriff or whatnot that he needs so many people to work, well, I mean, they would arrest you for street tax.
Yeah.
Or anything. Whiskey, anything. They would arrest you. And it was nationally known that you would be sentenced and you would have to work it out. And they would, the county or whatever the place was, didn't have enough money, they tell me, that to support, you know, to have things. So they would lease the people to these
yeah.
work
yeah.
camps, I guess they call them.
Yeah. So you heard about that?
I heard about
yeah.
that, yeah.
That had to be very difficult.
Yeah, that wasn't a strange thing. It yeah. was just a well-known thing, and the only thing you could do is try to stay away from it. And
Behave yourself.
In this particular area, most of the fellows were gainfully employed as fishermen, or something like that. But if you didn't have a regular job or you were working part-time, you were known that you would be arrested. But now if you were a fisherman, that they escaped plenty of things by gainfully employed.
So they kind of picked on people that weren't properly employed.
Wasn't properly employed.
Yeah.
And once that you were branded in that category, you was a repeat.
Yeah, I got you.
You came out right back, you see.
Oh, boy.
That was, I know some people, and in fact, I know some people back in that day.
Yeah. How about lynching? Was there ever any lynching that you knew of in your lifetime? Of course, we know Rosewood.
Yeah, I don't know of any. We heard that it went on when we were down in the St. Augustine area. We heard about out around Tocoy,
mm-hmm.
Hastings area,
mm-hmm.
and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was the most rural thing. I was around what we'd call the cities most
yeah,
of the time.
Okay.
But in the rural area, it was a common occurrence. Mm-hmm. I heard that
yeah.
That was the intimidated jesters.
Yeah.
That's what we term it nowadays.
Yeah. Well, let's talk for a minute about your parents. Where were they from?
My mother's from South Carolina.
Okay.
She came with
your grandparents.
With my grandparents. Uh-huh. My dad, I don't have too much on him, but he was born and raised down at Nassauville.
Okay.
Fishing, oystering, shrimping,
uh-huh.
that sort of thing. And he came up. He'd shrimped all his life, so That's all he knew. He came up from Donette in Fernandina, and that's where he met my mother here in Fernandina.
Well, that's an interesting story. How about their concerns for race relations? Now, this might be something closer to your memory. How did they feel about segregation and the way the blacks were treated? And did they ever talk about that when you were kids?
It exists.
Yeah.
When you are in a certain pattern of life or livelihood, it was accepted pattern with them. They know the limitations of their existence, mm-hmm. let's call it that way. Because if you didn't, you had to make a living,
yeah.
and you accept certain things in order to survive. And I think that was the general pattern of that day and time.
They really couldn't do much about it.
They couldn't do anything about it, yeah. so you accept that as a general pattern. Now, my recollection of it, as I came up during that area, it was the schools, churches, theaters, all that, which I'm quite familiar with because that was my area I came up in,
yeah,
see?
Yeah.
And I can go over details that it happened to Pate School and things like that that I really know about, you know, that like the athletics out there. We had no gym, no naturally you didn't have all that stuff back in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we built the first court, basketball court. We boys had a team, so we would go out to in the country out around Hilliard and Callahan, get clay, and we made a clay court. Dumped the clay and spread it, mm-hmm. made the coat and tamped it, watered it, and tamped it until it got it fairly smooth that mm-hmm. we could play basketball
mm-hmm.
on. And we named that Bullet Stadium.
That must have been after a Mr. Bullet?
Bullet was the principal.
Okay.
And we got the ingenuity, you can tell it, we put from the sawmill, they gave us the, we call them slabs, you know, when they cut the lumber,
mm-hmm.
in order to get the smooth, the bark part was a long strip. They gave us all that and we hauled that in, and that's what we made our fence around. It was a nice thing.
Isn't that great? That's
so we built our first out there. Now, Peck was a very small school. It's nothing like it is. You see it there now.
Yeah, yeah.
It just was the main building. All these additional buildings came since the time we were out there.
Yeah. How about, was anyone in your father's family, or was your father ever involved in the military?
Yes, World War One.
World War One. Your dad was in World
War
One.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah.
The military was segregated then.
Oh, definitely. He was in, I forgot the company he said it was in. It was definitely segregated, but the soldiers, from what he used to tell me, he was so proud of his activity they did. And that group of them get together, and they were over in Germany, and he'd talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
But they it was.
Well, that's interesting. What did your parents do in their leisure time, if they had any?
Well, it wasn't too much to do so far as from a recreational standpoint, but I think my father, well, he fished, and that was a grueling hard job back in the day that he was doing it. He'd own his own little boat in later years,
uh-huh.
small, very small, and everything was done by muscle.
Yeah.
He didn't have all this mechanized areas
yeah.
as we got now,
yeah.
and he mended his own net, made his own net. So, when he came in from fishing, he mended his net. That was the thing to do because something had definitely torn holes in it. So
yeah.
they would mend the net, and they couldn't buy a net that easy.
Yeah. Did your mother and dad ever go anywhere for what we'd call a vacation today?
No. It didn't? No, that was out. My mother, she went to church in Macedonia.
Okay.
But something I missed at the beginning, my grandfather, going way back now, he was one of the organizers of Macedonia.
Was he?
Yes.
Okay.
It was five people, and he was one of them.
He was one of them.
One of them.
Okay. Well, I'll remember that when we get a chance to dig into their history.
Yeah.
Did your parents vote? This was towards the end of Reconstruction, I guess.
No.
Jim Crow.
The way he tells me, they didn't vote. Because there were only one vote that could be cast, you had to be a Republican or a Democrat. And if you were a Republican, that you could vote in the general elections. But there were no local, if you got a picture in your mind, there were no local Republicans at that time. And you know why. There were no local Republicans.
Yeah.
So there were no voting done.
Okay.
You see?
Okay.
All local offices was Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
And only a Republican vote could have taken place were general elections. And then there were the poll tax.
Everything they could do to prevent you.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Yeah.
Then you were intimidated if you went to vote then, you know. Yeah. I mean, that was the general practice.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Did anybody in your family keep a diary?
If it is, was destroyed.
Okay.
We tore down my mother's house and lots of things that got away during that time.
Were your mother and dad worried about racial violence, Ku Klux Klan problems, any of those kinds of things?
Not my dad. Okay. My dad, I wonder why Jackie didn't miss. He was a rugged guy. And all the fishermen were rugged people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody bothered them.
Yeah, okay.
They were strong, they worked hard, and they were...
Good citizens.
They were good citizens. They didn't bother anybody. They drank moonshine, but they didn't bother anybody. But they worked hard.
Yeah.
And they, you can imagine back in there, you going out on the ocean every day out there with just a compass.
Yeah.
And that's about all you had. You didn't have all this electronic equipment and all this in your boats then, because it wasn't that big.
Yeah. And it was a tough way for them to make a living,
I guess.
Did you and your parents feel like you were protected by the law, the local law? Did you need protection? Did they protect you?
Providing. You could get protection, but if you were a good citizen. But
you
I'm talking about a good citizen.
Yeah.
You tend to your business and
you were okay.
And like that, you didn't have any problem.
Yeah. Okay.
Lots of families around here were like that.
Yeah. Okay.
They were, and you got to picture Fernandina now. Fernandina was not the Fernandina you see now.
Yeah.
Majority of the black people, Fernandina was almost a majority black at one time. And the areas that you see now, up on North 3rd Street, 2nd Street, and all like that, that was mostly black areas. And Fernandina was a totally different Fernandina than you see now.
Mm-hmm.
So there were we didn't have too many problems.
Did the blacks begin to leave Fernandina at some point, or? How did that mix change?
That mix started changing in the early 40s. As the mills came in, I think Container came about 1937.
Mm-hmm.
Ran there about 1939, and they began to hire people. Different people began to come in, white.
Yeah.
And they began to come in.
Okay.
And the whole structure began to change from what it was as they began to economically better their condition. They began to buy up areas. And
did this hurt the blacks?
Yes, to the extent that if you area that you had not paid taxes on. Some of the people just didn't have the money. Mm-hmm. In the 30s. Mm-hmm. You can understand that.
Sure.
And there was a lack of paying taxes. And then after the 40s came in, there was a demand for areas, and then tax foreclosure was a common occurrence.
You didn't pay your taxes, you might lose your property.
You lose your property.
Prior to that, you didn't think
didn't about it. Nobody bothered about it. But, and that's the way so much of the property was lost in Fernandina.
I see. In 1954, the Supreme Court came up with a ruling called Brown versus the School Board, which said separate but equal was no longer any good.
That's right.
Do you remember any of those times, and do you remember what the people thought about Brown versus education?
Brown versus education, if you remember, it was challenged so many times before it got down to the local level here.
Yeah.
It didn't immediately after the Supreme Court decision, it wasn't immediately put into action in the local areas. I think there was challenged 2 or 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And you know about the Alabama situation and all that.
Yeah.
And it was challenged
Saint
in the state.
St. Augustine had a big mess too.
Yeah. It was challenged in the state of Florida. I'm trying to think who's the governor. One governor that we had was Ferris Bryant, somebody. Anyway, I think it was Ferris Bryant, and he told me the Supreme Court interpretation of the law was the law of the land, and all Florida state schools would go by. Then they began to integrate the school. Now this was down in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
It passed on down, so it was actually in the 1960s before the schools began.
Mm-hmm. That's actually what happened at St. Peter's. You know, Good Shepherd was combined with St. Peter's in the middle 60s, but the law had been passed in 54.
That's right.
So it took a while.
Yeah, I remember that now.
How did tell me a little bit about it.
We had Good Shepherd. We call it the church down the hill. I guess you heard that.
Yeah, and St. Peter's was the church up
the hill. The church down the hill, and it was a wooden structure, nice looking building, high above the ground because it was a low area down there. If you know, it's still set up high steps go up in it, and belfry. It was very well-constructed, built church, wood, and Father Kelly, I can remember him. He would have service at St. Peter's, and he'd go down the Good Shepherd, have service down the Good Shepherd, and that's the way it worked.
Do you remember any Ku Klux Klan activity during those times?
Mm-hmm.
When they were trying to bring those two churches together?
True. I am, I like to call the priest's name.
Father Gray.
Father Gray. He was before Father Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
When they first brought the churches together, they had a parade. Some people say that wasn't what it was about, but there was a wedding to take place there. The Triads, small town, I guess when you get there, Alfreda, she'll mention this, which was her cousins. Miss Grace Triad was a member of Good Shepherd, and her children had gone to school, graduated from college, and whatnot, and they this. One of them, I think it was Marie, wanted to be married in the church. Well, it was difficult because Good Shepherd at that time had reached a dilapidated state steps.
Yeah.
You can imagine the steps were really high.
Mm-hmm.
Going up there because you could walk, put another church in the bottom of it. It was so high up.
Yeah.
And they were going to have the wedding and that they don't know whether, they say that wasn't the cause of the march, but I think Father Gray was there then. And then after that, then there was another one.
This is Ku Klux Klan marching.
Ku Klux Klan march. And I'm trying to think of the they said the chief of police at that time, and I can't remember his name, say he led the Ku Klux Klan in, and they fired him immediately. I can't remember his name now.
I was just going to ask what the police did about it. They probably didn't do much.
Oh, they were there.
Let them.
They were there.
Yeah,
they were mostly there with them. See,
yeah,
and they didn't. Nobody. They were all friends back in that day. let's put it that way.
Yeah. Okay. I understand. How about your family? Did everybody in your family read? Not. But I mean, your mother and dad the children.
My mother did.
Uh-huh.
My mother read fluently. She was all my mother and her family were well educated. They were teachers. And my aunt was one of my aunts. She was in charge of nurse training at Brewster Hospital in Jacksonville.
Okay.
All her sisters were pretty.
Was Brewster a black hospital?
Brewster was a black hospital.
That's Jackie was talking about going to Jacksonville to Brewster to get his foot fixed.
Yeah, that's where he went to get his foot fixed.
Yeah.
He had a foot was twist like that ever since he was a kid.
I see. Okay. Well, how about as you were growing up, did your brothers and sisters all learn to read in school?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
but
yes.
Your dad didn't read.
My dad read, but not fluently.
Not well. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The way he was raised in Nassauville,
yeah,
the schooling was not good.
That's
my mother, well, she when she came, she was about, I think she said she was about either 15 years old, 16 years old, and wherever the settlement was in South Carolina,
yeah, Sumter,
they
said.
Taught them to go to school.
Uh-huh. See. Okay. We were talking before we turned the recorder on a little bit about newspapers,
uh-huh.
And which ones again did you read? Or
well,
did your family
it was
read?
Pittsburgh Courier.
Okay.
The Amsterdam News. It was printed in Baltimore.
Okay.
And there were no local papers until later years. The Star came out, but there were no local papers. Now they're in the Time Union and out in the late 60s, middle of late 60s, they hired a guy named Leroy or something other, and he would print one page. They called it the Star Edition.
Okay.
Anything
black
like
news,
black news, yeah. Church news,
yeah,
anything
okay.
like that. It was print in that one page was added
okay.
to the Time Union.
Yeah.
And
you know, I've
Time
heard
Union or the Jacksonville Journal is one of those papers. Yeah.
I've heard that there were several black newspapers published in Jacksonville, but I've never seen one.
Oh, yes, it still is.
Did they not get up here?
Oh, no. They,
the
but
papers?
They didn't. All this came after, and it wasn't in the 40s. It could have been in the 40s. They were just one sheet paper or two sheets, you
yeah,
know.
Okay.
The last guy, Spike Washington, was the guy that worked for the Time Union. And he eventually went started printing the Florida Star, which was a black newspaper, and
okay.
it took care. At first, it was just social events, and then it went in later years. I think he just died about a couple of years ago.
Was that from Jacksonville?
From Jacksonville.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's got to be a pretty big newspaper in the later years.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had two sisters.
Two sisters?
Just the three of us.
Okay, mm-hmm. okay. They all still here in Fernandina?
Well, one of my sisters is here, and my other sister lived in Jacksonville. She died last year, age of 92.
Bless her heart. Bless her heart. Did you work when you were young?
Oh, sure.
Did you? What did you do?
Well, I carried papers, newspapers, delivered milk. You can picture back in late 30s, you deliver milk in milk jars, you
yeah.
know, glass jars.
Yeah. Bottles.
Bottles,
yeah.
and you deliver milk.
Yeah.
And And that means you took the milk and you put it on the doorstep, so like that, see?
Yeah.
In the mornings, early in the mornings, and I had a paper route, and we're working stoves, working Lowe's grocery. Jenny Lowe.
Yeah, yes.
Her husband's father, he had a big store, Lowe's grocery. And
it's over there where there Ace Electric was.
Yeah, right? I worked there for years, you know.
Yeah, okay.
And that's when all the, going to school, that was sweep out the store in the morning, come back in the afternoon. And you got to picture it, everything wasn't packaged in those days. You buy it in bulk.
Yeah.
And then you put up in 2-pound packages, 5-pound packages, and people say, tie it with a cord.
Okay.
They did that.
When you earned money doing those things, you were still in school.
Oh, yeah.
Did you have to give some of that money to your parents to help?
Oh, yes.
Did you?
That was just...
It was a given, huh?
It was understood that you did that.
Okay. Were you able to keep some for yourself?
Yeah, they gave you some. Oh. You didn't keep it.
You gave it all to them.
You gave it to them, and they gave you back what you had.
I see. Okay.
And then it was put away that you could come Christmas, whatever, then you had money to buy.
Was that pretty well the case for all young black kids in those days, that they worked and gave the money to their parents?
And the money went to their parents.
Yeah, okay.
This is back, in the 20s and 30s we're talking about.
Yeah.
All money went to household. Okay.
Did your parents have white friends?
Oh, sure.
To come to the house?
Oh, yes. And I got one now that we raised up together, Clyde Brazel. And right today, we just as close today as we were then.
That's wonderful.
Henry Martin, Clyde Brazel, we raised up together. Just today, we are just as close today as we were then.
How did all this black-white segregation stuff, how did that affect? Did you two, you and Clyde, talk about that? Did it bother you?
Well, we didn't pay any attention to it.
Yeah, okay.
We went to swimming, there was no swimming pool in the creek.
Okay. Well, now, if you went to the movies downtown, I understand from Jackie the blacks sat upstairs and the whites. How did you handle that with Clyde?
Well, we went to the movies. Clyde went to the movies. Okay. We talk about the... He went downstairs. Okay. I went upstairs. We talk about the movies the next day or so.
I see. Okay.
We saw the same movie. And I told you, it's an accepted thing, and nobody... the benches now, come the day you think about it, because now to upstairs, there were no seats per se. There were benches, wooden slatted benches
that
you sat on. There were no conveniences whatsoever. And so that's the way it was.
Yeah. What do you remember about the days after 1954? And I know it took a while to work its way out, when you could finally begin to use a washroom. It wasn't black or wasn't white, or you could go into a restaurant.
Water fountains.
Yeah, you'd have to. Do you have any experiences during that period you can tell me? How about the first time you went to a washroom that wasn't marked black?
I was just went to a washroom, and...
It wasn't a big deal.
No, it wasn't a big deal, but it was a new experience, I'd put it that way.
Yeah.
But I can describe this to you. At the courthouse downtown, that's a description. There was the bathrooms, and I don't know whether they moved it yet or not, but outside of the courthouse proper, in the backyard of the courthouse, there were two bathrooms. There were one bathroom marked colored, and there were two bathrooms marked men and women that were white. Clearly understood that you didn't use neither one of them. You used the one marked colored. Inside the courthouse, as you went out the back door of the courthouse downtown, there were water fountains. There were two water fountains, and there were one water fountain marked colored. And that if you were caught using just getting a drink of water, regardless of whatever the circumstances from there, then that was a misdemeanor.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. Well, how did you feel when this change was taking place? Were you afraid in the beginning to drink out of a fountain that wasn't marked? Was it a problem?
Well, like I said, it was an accepted thing.
Yeah.
I went in the service in 1943, and when I came out of the service, I had a different outlook than I did before I went in.
What happened?
I spent a lot of time in the Chicago area at Great Lakes, Illinois, and then lots of time in California, and lots of time overseas. And when I didn't run into the things that I had run in here. When we come back, the guys just wouldn't accept the things that they left.
Did you kind of feel that way too?
I felt that way.
Yeah.
I mean, things that you left, you was not going to accept those things because it wasn't necessary that they be.
Yeah.
And so that was, I think that was some of the changing points was there.
You know, after World War I, C.T., and after World War II, there were two, they call them great migrations. Blacks went north for good jobs because they couldn't earn a decent living down here.
That's right.
Did that have anything to do with the change in the complexion of Fernandina? Did a lot of blacks go north that you know of?
Well, not in Fernandina proper, because the mills had begun to flourish.
So,
and
the
war preparation. And the mills were running all they could get to try to supply or catch up with the war effort.
Yeah.
When we came back, it came back in 47, and things were made, it was tremendous change here then.
Okay. I've got another question that probably would ask you to reach back a little bit. It fits back with your grandparents. You're familiar with the fact that the Seminoles intermarried with blacks, they fought together, they grew their crops together. Did you ever hear your family talking about the Indians and the blacks? Can you share anything?
Directly involved.
Yeah.
I would like to show it to you today. Picture of my grandfather. If you had the minute, when you leave here, by the house, I'm going straight.
Okay.
Then that don't have to answer nothing.
Okay. Was it ever talked about? Obviously, he looked very much like an Indian, right?
Oh, he was.
He was an Indian. Yeah.
He was a Negro and Indian. That's what they call it back. And they never thought more about it.
Yeah.
All of my people, my mother. You could see it in her more than anything else with the high cheekbone.
Now, the grandparents that came down from Sumter, South Carolina, were your mother's?
Mother's.
Okay, so we're talking about your father's.
My father people, they were not.
Yeah.
They were not. But my mother people, they were her father more or less the mother. They were real fair-complected people.
Okay, and were they the ones that showed the Indian
traits? They showed the Indian traits.
Was it ever discussed? I mean, I'm a real fan.
My mother discussed it.
Yeah.
My mother, because they were people that were, I think Jack gets to tell you more about this, because he was they were too. They had a different perspective than people that were just slaves.
Yeah, okay.
You see, they were different, they had a different outlook.
Yeah, okay.
They wanted to be educated, they wanted to accumulate, they wanted to do things, and that was the difference. They always had a different outlook.
So you think the Indians were a good influence
on
the
blacks?
They were a good
influence.
Yeah. We know they intermarried, we know they worked together, they fought together. I don't mean fought each other. Mm-hmm.
But in the St. Augustine area, it was more prevalent in St. Augustine proper. In the rural area, it wasn't. But in the St. Augustine it was...
You could see it.
You could see it. It's between the Spanish and the Indians down there.
Yeah. Okay.
And you'll see what I'm saying when you meet Alfreda.
Okay. She has Indian blood?
Well, I have Spanish.
Yeah, and half Spanish. Okay.
Yeah.
Did your family ever talk about what it felt like to be poor and to be black?
Oh yeah, I can tell you that.
How did they?
It's a frustrating thing if you're allowed to get you to that point. Mm-hmm. You can become very frustrated, but if you're willing to sacrifice and work hard, you will come to obstacles. That's the name of the game.
Yeah.
For anybody.
Okay.
You see, so I've been fortunate because my dad was a hard worker.
Mm-hmm.
He worked hard and we owned property in St. Augustine, owned property in Fernandina, and I inherited some of the property I have now is my father's,
mm-hmm.
and houses up on 10th Street, houses out on,
mm-hmm.
I inherited from him, you know,
mm-hmm.
Because he was under the impression that a man wasn't a man until he owned something. And he did not believe in working for anybody.
Yeah, I admire that.
That was his, and for that reason he worked hard on the boat, and he owned his own boat. And he feel that even though it was tough,
but it was his.
It was his.
Yeah.
And,
how about, I think we've all almost already touched on this one. Can you describe the community you grew up in? Was it a happy community? Was it, how would you describe it?
About a yardstick of measurement. There's no comparison to what we would call happiness today. I think people are accumulation of things for happiness is probably how we had a piano, we had a crank music box,
mm-hmm.
and this is my mother's. My mother was the anchor.
Yeah. Okay.
And we had a home in St. Augustine. It was a nice home right on the river. And we had a home here, a two-story house on 7th Street, just torn down about 2-3 years ago.
Would your family have been considered the more rich among the blacks?
No, they were hard workers. My dad, my mother never worked that much.
Yeah.
But
she worked bringing you kids up.
Well, she
kept the house.
She had to keep the figures.
Yeah.
Let's go with that.
Keep the
banking the money.
Yeah.
My dad, he never bothered that sort of thing. He banked the money. She kept the bills going, paid the taxes, paid the everything, and kept the books. Because you had, in later years, as you had to keep a record of things, and she did that.
Okay.
And that's most of what she did.
Were babies born at home?
Yes.
Were you born at home?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. I was born in Jacksonville.
Okay.
I'm a midwife.
Uh-huh.
That was, they had midwives. Most kids were born at home. They had no hospitals.
No, there wasn't.
Yeah.
And, you and Jackie have talked about Brewster Hospital. But there was no hospital here at all. Okay. Yeah.
When my kids came along, my kids were born in Brewster. And like that, but when years before that, all kids were born at home.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think you've already answered one of the questions I have. Did your family keep money in the bank?
No, not that much. They keep some in the bank, but not.
Where'd you keep the rest of it?
They kept it at home.
Kept it home.
Everybody had a strong box.
Okay. That's interesting. It didn't earn any money. Of course, in those days, it didn't pay.
No, it didn't pay any money. It wasn't like the day now.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't any point of, let me see how my dad used to put this thing. He didn't want nobody to know his business. I'm trying to put it as best I can. It was difficult for a man you worked and you made money, but for the knowledge that how much you made and what you had,
was nobody else
was always a way
to
get it from you.
Yeah, okay.
Let's put it that way.
Well, that leads me to another question. Was there a problem with people being robbed if everybody kept their money at home? did people, there wasn't a problem?
No.
Yeah, okay.
Nobody, you know, that day, there were, people wasn't as mean. More people were family oriented, and if my memory serves me right, because if there were, people didn't lock the doors, they wasn't worried about people coming in. Somebody may, we had chickens and all that sort of thing, you know, in the garden or whatnot. Somebody may go, go get a mess of greens.
Yeah.
I want a chicken or a few eggs.
Yeah.
And go out there and get them.
They needed it, so,
No big deal.
Yeah, okay.
And so there was no reason for nobody to steal, so to speak.
Yeah, okay. Well, now you mentioned in your family a number of homes. Was that one way maybe your family invested? Did your dad buy a house here or a house there as a means of investing his money?
That's the way his money went.
Did he rent these homes?
No.
He did. Okay.
He rented in St. Augustine. We still got one duplex down there. He couldn't fish anymore. We got two.
Okay.
He took, sold his boat, put his money in these houses. You buy a house for $800 or something like that.
Yeah.
And he would patch him up, and that's where he would get his livelihood from.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Okay. Let me see here. I got one more sheet with some more questions. So, when were you and Ruth married?
We was married in 1939.
1939, just before you went in the service.
Yeah. 1942, 43.
Where did you meet Ruth?
Right here in Fernandina.
Yes.
She's from North Carolina.
Okay.
And her dad was a fisherman on, we call them pogie boats.
Pogie boats, sure.
Fertilizer, pogie boats.
Yeah.
And they migrate, you know. I know somebody told you how they do.
Yeah.
They fish here and the season was off. They go,
somewhere
to
else.
New Jersey or North Carolina.
Yeah.
And that's where she'd go and come. She'd be in New Jersey. I think she went to school mostly in New Jersey.
I see.
Then in later years she came down, and the fishing was better in the area here because they opened up area down around Louisiana or something like that.
Okay.
And they stayed here most of the time.
I see. Okay. What did you and Ruth think about segregation? Did you talk about that at all?
No, it didn't affect us.
It didn't affect you.
Because I guess the fact is that let me see, Cheryl, my oldest kids, they went to Peck School. They graduated, all of them graduated from Peck. My younger ones, Kevin, he never went to integrated school. Chuck always went to integrated school.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of Chuck.
So it was really you and Ruth experienced things more so than your children.
Yes, now the children.
Yeah.
Robert, my oldest son, he experienced, but I don't think, because he graduated from Peck. And he went to school. My oldest child, she graduated from Peck, and she went to Edwards College. Another daughter, she graduated from Peck. She went to Gibbs College down in St. Petersburg.
Okay.
Then after Robert went to college, and then he went into the service, the money got kind of tight. And he had either come out and go into the service, so he went into the service.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he came back out and he went to Temple in Philadelphia.
When was your first child born? What year?
Last of 1940.
Well, that's it. Again, before you went in the service. Mm-hmm. In those days, did the black couples plan their families? I mean, they just happened.
Whatever.
Okay.
Whatever.
Did anybody in your family, any of your kids have an interest in music or the arts? Any of them turn out to be?
No. I wouldn't say the arts. Patricia, one of my daughters, she likes what's called modeling and that sort of thing. Because she went to Washington. From Washington, she married a fellow and he lived in Columbia. And then she had an aneurysm. And that's the one of my daughters that died. But she went into modeling and fashion design and that sort of thing. I don't know if you call that art or not.
Yeah, well, that's a form of the arts, that's right.
Yeah.
Do you talk much, or did you talk much about Lincoln's emancipation of the blacks? Was that something you celebrated once a year?
It was one of the highest celebrations that we had when I was coming up.
Yeah, okay.
Was the Emancipation Proclamation.
Okay.
And I guess you have wondered, some people wonder, well, why do black people celebrate the first of the year, or New Year's?
That's it.
You see?
That's it.
But we celebrate it different.
I see.
In the churches, and I let your mind follow me here close, in the average church, black church, you go by there, New Year's night, the church lit up, people from everywhere. They had what they call watch meeting.
Watch meeting?
Watch meeting.
Okay.
All right, they start a watch meeting, singing and praying and whatnot, maybe about 11:30, 11 o'clock. Sing songs, spirituals, down by the riverside, ain't gonna study war no more, whatever the case may be, all spirituals, Negro spirituals. All right, then maybe about a quarter to 12, you place a person in each corner of the building, see, and you place the one in the center, and they start calling watchmen.
Okay.
Give me a minute or all, and he'll give you maybe 14 minutes to 12. And then another watchman, what time? He'll tell you 13 minutes. And they'll keep that going around and around.
Okay.
And to right at 12. You see, at 12 o'clock was the day that the Emancipation Proclamation came
January
into effect.
January 1st, 1863. Yeah.
So that's a big celebration.
Okay, it still is. Is that right?
Still is.
Yeah.
Okay. Today.
Yeah. As a child, did you understand?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Before you start your next question, may I turn the tape?
Yes, you may, honey. Okay. You want to say that about younger people?
Younger people are carrying on the same tradition of Emancipation Proclamation, because it's history.
Why, sure.
It came into effect on January the 1st,
yeah,
in 1863.
Yeah.
And it was an important time.
Yeah.
If you can let your mind and body think that all these years you never knew anything about freedom per se, and all of a sudden here's this thing here that say, I'm free. I don't have to answer to anybody but myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a hard experience, I can imagine, back then.
Well, as a child, you grew up around this at the end of the year. Your parents, your church believed in this and so forth.
That was a tremendous holiday, picnics and everything went on that day. You know,
as well it should be.
Well, because that was very hard day for.
Okay. Well, we're coming to the end of this, CT. Before we turn the tape off, I just want to ask you if there are any things that run through your mind we didn't talk about that you think relate to the history of black folks here in Nassau County?
Well, one, I'd like to outline them from two or three different angles.
Okay.
From an educational standpoint.
Okay.
It's hardly mentioned and would never come up anywhere about the number of black students that had left Nassau County or went to school, went to doctors, attorneys, got their own law firms, local people, they come back when they have a Peck High celebration or something like that, they all come back and it's, oh my God, you wouldn't believe it.
When did they start leaving Fernandina to do that?
Mostly, speaking from my experience, my kids, most of them, when they went to college. As you can imagine, going to college back in that day for a family, mm-hmm. If you had two children, they were really strapped to go. And a person to have three children, and it was amazing the families in this general area that have sent two and three kids to big colleges. And how did they get the money?
Yeah.
Don't nobody know.
Yeah.
The Alberts, for instance, Charles Albert's family, every one of those kids have professional positions and profession.
Uh-huh. When do you think that started? The 30s, the 40s?
Well, it started within the family. The desire to want to be more
than you were,
than your parent were,
yeah.
Or your parent desire to make more for you, a better life for you than they had.
Yeah.
That's the way it starts. And that's the way it started with us, because we figured that our children could do better. And we sacrificed to make sure that they did do better.
That's wonderful.
And there is so many families. I'm surprised Jackie didn't bring this up. There were so many families around here. Oh, man. You can just name family after family. And Elfrida family, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, they were.
And this was happening in the late 30s and 40s?
Yes.
Wonderful.
Take Neil Fink.
Yeah.
You know him.
Yeah, sure.
That's Elfrida's nephew.
Okay.
That's her sister's
sure,
child.
Okay, well, yeah,
see?
Okay.
And her sisters. I'm just take him because you know
yeah,
him.
Yeah, sure, okay.
And that family, boy, they really gone
yeah,
up.
Yeah,
that Tree-Eye family, boy, they really. See, Neil is considered a Tree-Eye family because his mother was a Tree-Eye. That's the way I put it.
Okay.
His father was a fishboat captain.
Captain. Yeah. Uh-huh.
He called him Captain Flink, Captain Neil.
Flink.
Yeah. But his mother was a Tree-Eye. It's Elfrida's sister.
Okay. How about the GI Bill? Did that help a lot of people?
Oh, yes. That's the way they got to school. A lot, so many of us.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We would never, I would never have gone uh-huh. without the GI Bill because there was no incentive to go.
Yeah, it made a big difference.
Came from the service. Yeah. And then they made it was so easy for you to take courses. You didn't have to go and spend, you could take courses from Ed Waters, you can take courses from with Florida Anomalous, not in St. Augustine anymore. You could go on Friday and Saturday to classes, and you could build up your credits that way. It was they made it real easy for you.
Bethune-Cookman, I guess?
Oh, yes, Bethune-Cookman took care of so many of them.
Yeah, uh-huh. Wonderful school.
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of anything else before we wrap up here that would be of interest?
I started to mention about the educational standpoint, and then so many kids began to travel in areas and they got law enforcement, they had the ministry, they had oh my God, I can't, and medical professions.
Mm-hmm.
We got lots of guys who went into the medical profession out here, and I don't know how many doctors, got so many of them. Little Fernina fellows that, like you say, the GI Bill did it now.
Mm-hmm.
I think in most cases, got them started, let's say it that way.
Yeah.
And they would go into the service for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
whatever the case may be, and they would come out that have the GI Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And they took advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that started. So that was really a pushing point for so many young men.
Yeah. I got on that stimulates a question, the last question I have for you, and it comes to today's times more. You read so much about young black boys, young black males getting in trouble today, and it seems to me that the majority of those troubled young black men come from single-parent families.
True.
Where the mother and father are there together, the kids seem to come along okay. And today their education levels is just about up to where the whites are, but it's those single parents, the mothers that don't have a father. Were those kind of problems around in the days when you grew up? When did the family start to fall apart like we see today?
Well, there's always been that sort of thing. But there's always been ambition when I was coming up, because you can picture it from my standpoint. Things were hard. You didn't have the shoes, clothes, and whatnot that you probably desire. And you had to work hard to get them because, you know, any other way that you got them, you'd have a problem, you see.
It was wrong.
Yeah. And so, therefore, that you put a lot into hard work, ambition to do better than you were doing. And therefore, you put an effort towards it. Now, it seemed that everybody wants things the easy way. And the easiest way that you find is to take something that you have. And that's wrong. And now, since in today's world, we mentioned about single parent, usually if there is a single parent, she's either on public assistance, raising children, which don't give her enough money to take care of those children properly.
To do it right, yeah.
Or she's either, the kids have to, they would be ashamed of themselves. And so therefore, they try to do something to show that I'm as good as the Joneses.
See, yeah.
And that way, they do things that's not quite right. And now that's saying a lot for the single parent, because all single parents are not in the same category.
No. Right.
But there are so many that fall into that slot, where if there was a father, he would usually in the home, he would usually furnish enough, regardless of how meager it is, to take care of that family, feed them,
and clothes, add stability.
Add stability. And then when you got to look at it from where there's a single parent, then the discipline problem come up. There's no discipline. The mother don't have time to discipline the children. She's trying to make a living.
Yeah.
And she's putting in long hours, more or less. And the kids are on their own.
Mm-hmm.
They are doing whatever they feel like. And if you go down the line and pick up every criminal case we have, and you get his background, you'll find there's something in there that very few of them you find that mother and father in the home, that they go off in that direction.
Yeah.
It's peer pressure make them do that, but very few you find it.
Well, honey, you can turn the machine off now, and thank you.